Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Yeah, this was really a unique experience for me, Nancy. I mean, as you pointed out, I've been interviewed on radio podcasts many times, and this was a unique experience because we really delved into the entrepreneurial process and the challenges. You know, something that you and I talked about today that some listening entrepreneur could hear that would lead them maybe to avoid certain pitfalls, make the right decisions. You did a really great job. And yeah, so thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. If you're in transition with your business and how you're leading, they go together, please call me right away at 1-612-804-8920. Exceptional leaders always get help. And today's podcast sponsor, Sally Doyle. Also, go ahead, schedule a profit analysis with Sally Doyle for $149. Take charge of your money life. Sally's the founder of Absolute Business Solutions and is known as a trustworthy bookkeeper who loves crunching the numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs. You can sleep soundly knowing every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You're freed up to do the work that you're good at and keep leading. She's exceptional with QuickBooks. And if you just need a second opinion on what you're doing with QuickBooks, Sally Doyle, profit strategist, bookkeeper, and innovative thinker at Absolute Business Solutions is your person. You can reach her at 1-651-208-8151. You can also scroll down, and I've got her website and other contact information in the show notes. So it's Monday. David Mann's in the studio. Hi, David.
Well, hi there, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm doing real good. How about you?
Oh, good. Well, today we're focusing on shaping your story with your company called A Simple Message.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, David, just to give you a little background, David Mann brings his unique array of talents to every engagement. For over a decade, he's helped business leaders grow their businesses or companies, and lawyers win cases, all by using language and performance techniques he has mastered as a professional theater artist. For the first 20 years of David's career, he wrote, directed, and performed live theater at internationally recognized institutions such as the Guthrie Children's Theater Company and Great River Shakespeare Festival. In that time, he learned the art of connecting with an audience. He learned how precise language needs to have an impact. He learned how a dynamic stage presence is a combination of confidence and skill. And he learned how to teach those skills to other people so they can connect with audiences too. Then he discovered that messaging for marketing, sales, internal communication, and legal persuasion are all versions of the same thing: using words and delivery to engage people. David has spent the past 15 years honing his craft. He has spoken nationwide at Fortune 500 companies. He's clarified messaging and presentation for a wide range of industries like finance, construction, medical devices, airlines, strategic planning, and IT. As a legal storytelling specialist, he's helped lawyers across the country recover millions for their clients in cases such as securities fraud, medical malpractice, wrongful death, defamation, and many more. He's on the adjunct faculty of Loyola School of Law in Chicago and the National Institute for Trial Advocacy. David is based in Minneapolis, and I first heard David's engaging presentation style when he spoke at this year's January's monthly meeting at the Small Emerging Growth Companies. So David helped us learn how to craft a simple message through 8 channels to clarify your own story, align your messaging, and reach your ideal clients. A Simple Message is also the name of his company. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's great to be here. I like talking about all this, so
yeah.
It's my pleasure.
Well, and we had a wonderful prior conversation, too, and our first conversation is on unscrambling the word story.
Right, yeah.
Because I didn't realize that there are different definitions for when people are talking about story.
Yeah, it's a word that's being thrown around all the time and has been for a good while now. In business or things that are outside sort of arts and entertainment. And I think that it's important to remember that we all mean something a little bit different when we say story. So, you know, the first thing that pops to mind when you say story usually is something akin to Hansel and Gretel or, you know,
yeah.
Gone with the Wind or something like that,
yeah.
Where it's a narrative story. And then when you apply it to business, a lot of times people think, oh, yeah, it's important to tell the story. And then they usually stop kind of there going, it's important to tell the story. And then, like, what then happens, you know?
Yeah.
And that can be interpreted as the history of the company, which is often where people go, it's important to tell the story. So we started 45 years ago and we are led by a very charismatic, you know, it's like nobody wants that story right away, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to lose them on the second sentence.
Yeah, yeah. But that's usually, that is a narrative. And so they will tend to go to that as the business association of story can often go right to that. Or it can be something that isn't a story at all, like a list of products and services, and then sort of just call it the story of what we do, you know?
Yeah.
And none of those things are engaging, is in my opinion.
Yeah. And one of the things you were talking about of unscrambling your story came about through your own experience with unscrambling your own story.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about yourself.
The story of my theater and sort of the foundations for all this, you mean?
Yeah, like because you had a major in this area, and talk a little bit about your parents because you grew up in a different kind of household.
Yeah, I mean first of all, my back, just so everybody understands, my background is a professional theater artist. So that's kind of where the story is going.
So you say professional artist because tell us what you mean.
Well, what I mean by that is that there's a lot of people that are in sort of the business world who are doing things that have to do with story or presentation skills or something that say, you know, oh, I used to be in theater, I used to do acting or something like that. And often if you ask a few more questions, you find out, oh, they did it a few times in college, but they've actually been in business the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing against that, but I just like to clarify, I actually trained for it as an actor. And then worked as an actor, director, and playwright professionally. So for big, huge productions with paying audiences, you know, for a good 20 years. I still do it from occasionally.
What were some of your favorite productions?
Oh, there's so many. At first, I would separate the one-person shows that I wrote and acted in, which I'll talk about in a minute, from the more conventional kind of, you know, American classics or Shakespeare or something like that. So there's that. I'll make that distinction first because the one-man shows are towering above everything else as my favorites, but they are kind of a different thing. So the sort of regular shows, I directed. I'm actually just about to begin the fifth run of Romeo and Juliet at Park Square Theater.
Oh, I love Park Square Theater.
And that's my adaptation, my 90-minute adaptation of the play that I've directed. I also directed, I think, 7 or 8 other shows for them, including 2 Jeffrey Hatcher plays, 1 Sherlock Holmes by him, and another one that's called Jekyll and Hyde. And I also adapted I directed the adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird. I was very proud of that show. These are the directions that I've done. I also was associate artistic director of a small theater company called Torch Theater for a while, directed a production of Cat in a Hot Tin Roof that I'm really proud of, 2006. And just on and on and on. There's so many of them. I don't know. These are all, they're all my favorites. I mean, that's the thing. Is it like, what's your favorite? Well, the one you're working on is usually your favorite.
Right. And then you're so immersed in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've written several shows that are, or a couple shows that are for other actors to perform. My favorite of those for sure is my show called Corleone, the Shakespearean Godfather. Where I rewrote the story of the Godfather as though it were a Shakespeare play.
Oh.
So the whole thing's an iambic pentameter. The whole thing is the play Shakespeare would have written if he had known the story of the Godfather. So it's partly
intriguing.
A parody, but it's also actually a serious take on what would he have done. Like in the movie, there might be just Marlon Brando kind of looks with his eyes and says, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, Shakespeare would have put a monologue, a soliloquy there. So I wrote the soliloquy that would have been there if it had made, so it wasn't necessarily just translating the lines. It was like reimagining the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. That's
and that
cool.
got done in Minneapolis a couple times and in New York. We had a great run in New York. And so those are some of my favorites of those.
Oh, so cool. All right. So you were starting to begin of how you grew up.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very stable and some might call normal suburban household in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Long Lake, Minnesota. My dad was a high school teacher of business and marketing. My mom was a part-time dental hygienist. We had a great upbringing at, you know,
you and your brother.
My brother and I. And my parents are still together and they're now in their early 80s and they're happy as could be. So they really are like that somewhat annoying example of like when everything works just great, it's impossible to live up to, you know. but hats off to them, you know.
Right.
So they raised us well. But the thing was is that you know, like a lot of parents who have kids that go into the arts, they are just freaked out about that idea when you're younger. You know, you want to go into theater and whatever, and everybody knows that's a really unstable profession.
Yeah.
Just any kind of arts, any kind of performance, at best, it's a risk, you know, to on your way to being a big, huge, rich and famous star. I wasn't even really aiming in that direction. I was just like, I just really like doing theater on stage. So like the worst paying, you know, quadrant of but my dad, being in a high school teacher of marketing and business, must have had more of an effect on me than I was admitting at the time, because he's a very generous man and very, very, very good teacher, but he got really impatient with the fact that I kept going, I don't care about any of that stuff, Dad. I'm just going to be an artist, you know?
Right.
And I went and did it for quite a while. Huh. And they were really very, very nervous and very skittish about the whole thing. And I just kept doing it. I majored in it at Northwestern University. I mean, I went out and I just kept going and going and going in this like risky, risky field. And they got more and more kind of upset about this as I got older and older, you know, into my late 20s. And
because they thought maybe you were going through just a long phase.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they thought that. Despite the fact that I was pretty, even in school and in earlier incarnations of my profession there, I was still pretty successful. I mean, I was rewarded in terms of people saying I was good, you know, so it would have been really risky if I'd been getting nothing but bad notices and nothing,
right,
you know,
yeah.
But it looked like I actually could have a future in it, you know, so.
Yeah. It was worth the energy that you were putting into it because you were getting the feedback from it.
And I was getting a lot of personal kind of you know, gratification out of it. And, I say all this to say that my parents and I, during that long period between probably mid-teenage and my mid-30s, really, didn't really see eye to eye and had a very difficult time communicating with each other. I felt like I was on Mars and they were on Venus. It was like we were in the same solar system, but we just could not understand each other.
Yeah.
And this all came to a beautiful and glorious single point when I had gone ahead and been in the arts. And so I wrote, this is the one-man show thing I was mentioning before.
Was there something that culminated all in a certain time frame that brought this story together?
Oh, yeah. So the as an actor, you're always kind of out of work. And so you have the option of, you know, finding other work like carpentry or something to fill in the time. Temping, stuff like that. And I did those things, but I also decided to write my own material so that I could be in it and then I would for sure be on stage. See?
Yeah, right. That's ensuring you're getting a paycheck.
Yes. Well, you're not. Paycheck's quite a stretch. You get to actually be on stage. That's it. Notice how I phrased it that way.
Wow. Okay.
If they give you some like beer tickets, then you're really, then hey, you're
something. On your way.
But anyway, I wanted to tell the story of my first real job teaching high school theater at Hill Murray High School. I wanted to tell that story because it was a complicated story to tell with all the layers. Mm. And I was there for 4 years. And when I got out of doing that, where I was directing kids and building scenery and their teacher, sort of more like a coach, but sort of a teacher as well, immersed in this world of education, getting a lot out of it, and a paycheck. And I got out of there and I really wanted to tell that story, but I found it was hard to tell that story effectively in a simple way. You know, you want to have an impact.
Right.
So I got an opportunity to, through some other whole thing, which is irrelevant, but I got an opportunity to write a one-man show about something. Mm. Just whatever you want, David. Write a one-man show about something. And I mentioned, well, I used to teach high school theater in a Catholic high school. Oh, that's a great story. Write that story, they said.
Oh.
So I went, all right. And I spent a couple months and I wrote out what became version one, performed it in this late night thing at the Jungle Theater. This is the mid-90s. And then just kept revisiting that show and getting it better and better and more smoothed out, short runs all over the place. And then the History Theater in St. Paul decided to pick it up and put it in their season, but they said, you need to make it long. It needs to be a full length show. At the time it was an hour. They said, you need to kind of write more so it's 2 hours because we need a full show in that slot for our subscribers, you know?
Yeah.
And I went, really? No, it's fine the way it is. I just got it worked out. What? Write 2 hours. So I wrote another hour. I actually reconstructed the entire thing and then it became a way better show. I was kind of going, yeah. Oh, that'll wreck it. My art, you know?
Yeah, right. I can't tamper with my art.
Yes. But it became way better. And that leads me to the single moment, which was very, very important moment for me. I'm at this point 37 or 38, something like that. And I'm performing this show. And so I've got my 2-hour one-man show that's about my life, my actual story. One of the things I put into the extra hour was the character of my dad so that I could be a character in my story. It's a weird thing. You are on stage acting out your own story, but it's from the past. So you're playing yourself as a character in the past. Mm. And then the other characters from that past. So my dad would be one of those. So I'm talking about kids in high school that I'm teaching, but David, the character's personal story is his dad never really quite understood what he was doing and how do you have a job and be an artist at the same time. And his dad is always kind of upset about this. So I had to play my dad saying these things to me in some of those scenes. This show opened for a really nice audience. It was like 500 people. It's a fairly big theater there. My parents were in that audience.
What theater was that?
The History Theater.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And my parents were in that audience. They saw me perform that show. They then had to leave really, really quickly because they had to catch a flight the next day to go to Arizona. So they called me from the airport the next day. And my mom said, your dad was in tears by the end of that show.
Mm.
He was so moved and so touched by it that he couldn't even speak afterwards. That's kind of why they had to leave. And that touched me so deeply
Yeah.
that I, I had been able to tell my own story, the real story, in front of my parents and 498 other people.
Wow, the hardest thing ever. Yeah.
I mean, all these people, like, you know, in support of that, 500 people in the room laughing and applauding, and like, it's all like real, you know?
Yeah.
In a very highly crafted, somewhat fictionalized version of it, it has to sort of be a little fictionalized to work as a story. They have never been the same since. That's now whatever it's, you know, sort of like 15 years ago, 16 years ago. They've never been the same. It's all, we've always been understood each other since then.
Nice.
So the power of the story is unbelievably potent. And that ability to reach them and reach that audience, that act of like, I wrote it, I worked it out, I crafted every word, and then I learned it and delivered it in that moment on stage where you get an immediate visceral response of laughter or applause or gasps or whatever you're looking for.
Right.
And to so deeply move the people in the audience as well as my parents, all with a highly crafted combination of words and performance. That's what I love doing.
Yeah.
Reaching
that
my parents.
Interaction with the audience.
Yeah. That you can feel. And all of this has, I mean, at the time, I wanted to just keep doing that. And I did try to write other one-man shows and market them around the country. It's really hard. It's like, there's never much money in it. And it's just really, you know. So I translated that to a different format, which is, you know, what I'm sure we'll talk about soon. But that the impulse for reaching an audience with words is deeply in my core. It's...
So while you were writing all this, I just keep thinking the level of risk-taking, I mean, to get in front of your parents and share this dynamic that went on for not just a few years, but like decades.
Yeah.
I just like hats off to you for the courage it took to do this and to go after this, to like go into the minutiae and the all the little details.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not many people get the opportunity to do something like that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's we want to reach the people that we care about the most, and often we never ever can, or the time runs out and you can't, something gets in the way and you can't, you know, and you live with the regret of having never really told your truth to them, and you know.
Yeah.
We do it in many, many ways. Obviously, standing on stage and doing it in public is not the only way. Maybe not even ideal for some, you know.
For me, it could have gone totally the other way.
For me, it was perfect.
But then you would have known.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Either way, it's like, I got to know, you know, the rest of our life, are we going to work this out or not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they always cared about me and loved me. And that was never in question. It was just this professional thing. They were just like, what are you doing professionally? How are you ever? The lines I had my dad say in the thing are things like, and he's from Virginia. So it was like, David, how are you going to get insurance? How are you going to take care of yourself?
Yeah.
How are you going to care for a family if you have that? You know, he just was so concerned.
Right.
He wasn't trying to stop my dreams. He was like, I don't get how this works.
It was a genuine concern.
Yeah,
he had
no
idea about the industry, so he couldn't even help you navigate through it.
No, right. And he knew a lot about business, but this had nothing to do. Theater does not operate. For the artist, theater does not operate like a business. You don't market yourself the same way. Nothing's the same.
Yeah.
So he was just useless.
You know? Yeah, and no one likes that
feeling. Nobody likes that. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So yeah, incredible background. And what a way to piece together also your life experiences in a way that really, talk about grounded confidence.
Right.
You know, you restructured and rebuilt your internal self from the ground up.
Yeah, that was one of many times. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And we can... talk a little bit about that too, because you've been through a lot of transition in starting up your own business.
Yeah.
How is it similar or different to your profession as a professional artist?
How is the business I'm doing now different?
Yeah. As a professional artist, did you have a company name?
No. No, you generally don't. No.
Yeah, you just paid as David Mann.
Yeah, yeah. You're just a you know, an so act, you, a talent for hire. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't need a company umbrella.
No.
So how did you make that leap?
Well, I'm still making it, you know, honestly.
Yeah. It's,
I still think of myself as this independent guy doing a thing.
Yeah.
And until recently, the business really didn't have a name. It was just David Mann and a website, David Mann. And about 2 years ago, I really wanted to well, there's a lot of gap here between the story I just told and where I'm at now, which we can get into. But to just kind of summarize, I was trying to, trying for years really to get those theater skills to apply to somebody besides theater people. It's one thing to go teach people how to act or how to write a play or how, I mean, you're just teaching the craft, you know?
Right.
But I didn't really want to do that. I wanted to do something that had a wider reach with a different purpose. I got very intrigued with that idea, but then it was like, well, what?
Yeah, right. What
nobody out there in business wants to perform. They don't want to make laughter. They don't want to work on, you know, how to make your design elements correspond with your play intent. I mean, like none of the stuff that play people would want, no one else wants that. So which pieces are going to apply? Because I couldn't just invent skills I didn't have. So I had to really, it was a lot of trial and error.
Okay.
And I did a lot of kind of presentation skill help, which I still do.
Yeah.
You know, how to walk around a room and do a PowerPoint presentation and be, I mean, sure, I can do that. It's a lot like acting. But frankly, it's not the most stimulating thing for me.
Yeah.
Because it's such a low level of performance compared to actual performance that I just go, yes, I can help you with that, but I'm interested in something else.
Well, it seems to me, based on how you've navigated your past, that you really like to dig into something in a lot of depth and go through the entire process of figuring these pieces out. So the projects that you would work on would need some degree of really complication.
Yeah, they have it now. Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I initially was perceived as and kind of was presenting myself as a guy who helps with communication or a guy who helps with presentation. So close to acting, but not really. And that was producing a lot of no depth for me.
Yeah.
Or just problems I didn't want to solve. Like if you call yourself communication guy, they're like, oh, well, we have a lot of inner office conflict. Can you help with that? And I'm going, that's not my thing at all. You know, not at all.
Like I'm
going to
dig in and really, you know, expand, blow up this conflict.
Yeah, I don't want to get
it looks like.
I don't want to get into that kind of thing. I want to get into what's as close as possible to prepared. This is the important thing: prepared communication.
Yeah,
that needs to have an outcome. Something you prepare in advance, you work it out. You deliver it, and there's an outcome you're looking for. That's the unifying thing for what I do now, which is some of that is presentation. You know, you have to give a presentation, but I'm not at all interested in when people are like, oh, well, we have, you know, these weekly meetings where we have to relay the numbers to the board. I'm like, no, that's not, there's no outcome to that. It's just information. It's
you want to go somewhere within the story of how you're working with somebody.
Yeah, I want to get into what they're actually trying to achieve for real, personally or professionally, through the use of this prepared presentation.
Yeah.
So that's how I came from communication and presentation to I started to work on story with people. But that's where I discovered everybody's talking about a different thing when they say story, and very rarely does it correspond with what I think of as story. And then it was also a very broad brush to market yourself as like story guy.
Because
people are going, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So I narrowed it down to messaging. And that has now become, bam, that's the thing that people need.
A simple message.
I was like, at first I was like going, should I call it like epic message? Epic message. Something big and huge and like important.
Yeah.
And I kept going, no one wants it. They want it. What do they really want?
Yeah.
Simplicity. Yeah. Clarity and simplicity. Mm-hmm. So I've called it that, and now, well, that works.
You've done enough presentations to find that that works. You had mentioned kind of defining success and failure on your own terms. You know, there's your dad's perception of what success is, and then there's society's, and then there's yours.
Yeah, that's important. Once you've had a great, huge meal of artistic success like I've had, that is largely on your terms. That's like, I have made a thing.
Yeah.
It has gone out into the world and people are responding positively to a thing I created.
Yeah.
So the success is coming from something you directly did. I have no ability to be some kind of like work in a company where the validation that you might get is for someone else's benefit. Like, oh, thank you for doing a thing that served the whole company or something, and the boss benefits and you just were the worker bee. That doesn't appeal to me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not that it isn't. I mean, it works for some people, but it really doesn't work for me. So this whole thing has been like you... And then you can be successful and get sort of societal affirmation because you've made a lot of money or you have a nice house or you have a nice car. None of that stuff really appeals to me either. I mean, you know, it's got to be that I have succeeded at doing something that I care deeply about.
Yeah.
And that thing has offered something of value to the world. And that's a much trickier thing to make happen.
Well, and that's the world of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's generating the income that you need to support the life work that you're doing.
Yeah,
and
right.
It has to resonate deeply with your soul. So by you piecing together your history, and we're talking about kind of, you know, unscrambling a person's story or unraveling it in a way that you can kind of build the bridge to reshape and redirect yourself in a new way as you're building out your livelihood and just extending out your life work, because we're living longer. And so we have opportunities to kind of reshape and reinvent ourselves and redesign what we thought we were going to be doing you know, and then that's the fun part, but it's also very scary. So you took the We Mentor Self-Leadership Well-Being Spectrum, which has those 8 different aspects. And I gave it to a person who was in an executive in career transition. And he had been on, you know, ton of different interviews and gotten like a lot of rejection that he had to work through. And it was for different things. And so when he finished it, we were looking at, you know, his well-being spectrum and the areas in which he is kind of deepening his understanding about himself and what he thought about it. And he started sharing like early on in his career, how things like with his football college coach told him to be in a position that he just didn't identify with at all. And so because he wouldn't play that tight end position, he was then dismissed from the team. So he's been like revisiting those experiences, are coming back in all these different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, well, this is why it's so important to kind of collect and put your history together.
Yeah, right. Sure.
And hone into what are the pieces that aren't working or that keep showing up.
Yeah.
Is your soul trying to heal that little piece?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that why it keeps showing up?
I mean,
you know, because it's not going away.
Yeah, yeah.
and it's like we feel very strongly like we have to address this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just never going to change the trajectory of my life if I don't resolve this piece. And so it was kind of liberating to find out that little nugget. So I'm just kind of reinforcing that going into the depth of your own personal story and connect the pieces. You know, there's a puzzle there to be solved, and it's your picture that you end up with.
Yeah, that's a good validation of that. I would just kind of summarize for myself that one thing that has been really bizarre in a way is that when you're in something like theater, you've chosen to go this very difficult path.
Yeah.
A lot of people around you are going like, congratulations for following your passion. Congratulations for doing this thing that's coming from your soul and all that. So yeah, I didn't go into cubicle world when I was out of college. I didn't follow some management path. So it looks like I followed this path that was all already very like passion driven. That became really, really confusing by the time I was 40, that I was like, I'm doing a thing that is supposedly driven by passion, but I'm not passionate about it the same way. And I'm not, now I've got 20 years of professional experience that doesn't apply to any other profession. What do you do when your passion thing runs out eventually?
Yeah.
That's a whole different kind of problem to have, you know?
Yeah. Like I'm done with that trajectory of my life.
Yeah.
Now what do I do?
You got to translate that to something else, which is extraordinarily challenging. I mean, that's what I've been doing these past 10 or so years.
Yeah.
The world is full of, I mean, you go to any bookshelf in the bookstore and there's just full of these books about follow your passion and do your love and work, you know, never work in a day in your life because you work is what you love.
Making a living without a job.
It sounds so great on the surface. It's so not what it appears to be. It's frankly, in my opinion, it's just not, it's not as easy as that. And finding your actual true thing that you have to offer of value might not align with what you thought passion was.
Yeah.
And it might not be something that's going to eventually pay you zillions of dollars. And you have to be okay with that.
Yeah, right.
But if you're going to actually be aligned, and I think that's the real truth about all of this professional stuff.
Yeah. Excellent. As we sum up, I also think that that might be another avenue for you to work with people.
Finding their true calling thing?
Yeah, sorting, because you've gone into it for yourself in such great detail.
Yeah.
And it's an area that you've developed over long decades.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I should look into that.
Hey.
Thanks, Nancy.
Yeah, give me a high 10.
Another thing for me to do career-wise.
Oh,
I will put that right there in the basket, and I will do that one.
Okay, great. Is there any other couple of tips that you have for anyone who is kind of trying to unscramble their story or their backstory of, you know, I mean, the passion part is a really big discussion for me because I too have had like a ton of conversations about it and redirected my work in all these different things, and nothing goes the way you think it's going to go, but it goes in the way it needs to go.
Yeah. Yeah, and even that is hard to deal with because you're like, well, don't I have any control then? It's just going to go the way it needs to go. I think that on this topic, I wish I didn't expect to talk about, but that's,
either.
Hey, why not? I think that the thing is people get in their own way a lot on this passion thing.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's as simple as do something you hate or do something you love. And you better find the thing you love or you'll be doing the thing you hate. Like it's one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
And the truth is you don't quite know what your passion is. We all want to believe that we just wake up knowing what it is. We know what we know about it thus far is what we know. But you have to keep trying things and you have to keep trying things that are out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
If you're going to ever solve this unbelievably difficult combination lock, which is what I feel like it is.
Yeah, right.
Where everything has to be aligned so that you are doing something that matters to you, matters to other people.
Yes.
And there is a paycheck available to do that thing.
Yeah.
Getting all that to line up, you can't just do what you want because there might not be any need for it or any money.
Right.
You can do it, but don't expect it to, don't feel like a failure if it doesn't pay. You gotta work harder to figure out where the rest of the combination lock, you know?
Yeah. So as we leave here, what just occurred to me was Jerry Seinfeld, just love all the conversations that he has with people. And one that stood out was when you mix comedy and money, they don't really go together.
Yeah, I heard him say that very same thing in that episode. Yeah, he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Because, and I would extend that to say, when you start to mix art with money too much, they cancel each other out. Because art is about chaos. Art is about tension.
Yeah.
Art is about unexplored questions, not answers. Art is wildly out of control. And then you capture a little piece of it and show what it means, what humanity is. Comedy is just a version of that. We laugh when we recognize. You can't make a joke that people are going to laugh at that has nothing to do with truth. It has to be based in truth.
Yeah.
And he's right, because as soon as you start to force it and start to go, well, it has to be excellent or else we're going to lose millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Well, you've killed all the inspiration right there. I don't know how they made that show work for so long.
Seinfeld. Yeah.
And it's just one of the absolute rare exceptions where everything works.
It's just like Friends.
Yeah. And I thought Seinfeld was head and shoulders better than Friends.
Yeah.
I mean, but Friends... was largely based on improv. I think those scripts were only loosely put together and the actors were allowed to improv quite a bit, whereas Seinfeld was tightly written and tightly crafted like a stand-up act.
Yeah, and he used a Bic pen.
Yeah, yes, Larry
and
David
a
wrote. Yeah. It's I've known people who worked on both those shows actually, and there's so much craft that goes into that kind of thing, and it's incredible.
Yeah, very much so. Well, this has been just an extraordinary conversation.
We barely talked about Simple Message, but we'll get to that.
Oh yes, for sure. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks so much, David, for such a meaningful, deep conversation about art.
Well, you're welcome.
Right?
My pleasure.
And messaging and your story and your background. It's been a delight.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thanks, Mike Cabeas, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, brother from another mother. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.